Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I am always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, let us know if there's any topics you would like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights on your platform of choice. We are coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, and other places, I'm sure. Oh, YouTube, of course. And, of course, all of our old episodes are archived on our YouTube channel, NIMSY Insights YouTube channel. Go check it out for lots of free industry resources available over there. Without further ado, I'm going to get into it. We are talking today about the 30-year flop, why big tech's localization model failed 4 billion people. I love this topic because it's a controversial topic, and I'm sure we're going to get into it here. For 3 decades, tech giants have spent fortunes attempting to localize products for emerging markets in Asia and Africa, yet adoption remains stubbornly low. Senior localization expert Muhammad Ikram, who goes by Ikram, drawing on 20 years' experience in the industry, finally reveals the core reason. The entire foundation of the localization model was laid wrong from the start. Discover why this flawed approach was allowed to persist and what is needed now to fix this colossal oversight. Muhammad is a seasoned localization industry veteran with over 18 years of experience driving linguistic innovation across global tech platforms. He's a speaker of Urdu and Punjabi. He has played a pivotal role in some of the industry's most significant localization milestones, from contributing to the localization of Windows 8 and Microsoft Office to leading the Urdu localization of Android and other Google products. Ikram, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Glad to be here.
Like I said,
thank you. I'm so happy to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, and before we get into it, I want to plug the article on LinkedIn that kind of lays the groundwork for a lot of what we're talking about today. Yeah. How Silicon Valley's cultural blind spot kept 4 billion people from using tech in their native languages.
Yes.
I love this. This is like all of the makings of a good podcast episode for me, because it's making a very bold statement that a lot of people are going to get upset about and maybe reflect upon. So I'm going to give you the chance here to lay out this argument. This is quite the bold claim here. It's a cultural blind spot that kept 4 billion people from using tech in their native languages. Can you give us a quick intro to your thesis here?
Yeah, so it's obvious. It's I don't think it's just a claim. It's a fact, because we can judge it right away. Any market, any emerging markets in Asia or Africa, the adoption of the tech in their local language is very, very low. For example, if I talk about my language, I work in Urdu and Punjabi, and there is less than 5% of the adoption. Maybe Android available in Urdu since 2010-12. I'm 40 years old. I have lived all my life in Pakistan, except for 2 years in Singapore. And I have hardly come across a person who uses Android in Urdu, right? So the adoption rate, maybe the data is not open, and it's not available openly for users. But from the experience, I would say it is like 1% maybe out of 100 million Android users. So same is the case with many other languages. And I have been talking to my colleagues from other markets, and same is the case in most of the emerging markets.
And so just to refine the conversation, the claim is really about emerging markets. And if I can oversimplify it to a little bit, it's essentially tech companies don't know how to properly handle localization for emerging markets.
Yes.
Comma. And therefore, the world has kind of passed by emerging markets. Why? Because you make this very interesting landlord-tenant metaphor in your article. Yeah. The tech companies are the landlord. They're the ones that are setting kind of the rules that you play by. If Apple is localizing in a certain way, well, Apple has the App Store. So all of the apps that go into the App Store need to localize that certain way too. Yeah. So Microsoft, Google, these big guys have kind of dropped the ball. And because of that, products are available in emerging markets in the local language, but no one's using them, those local languages. So all of this money is being spent to localize into Urdu. And at the end of the day, the customer's not getting what they want. Did I summarize that correctly?
Yeah. So it's complicated in one aspect is that people are still using their product in the international version, right? But that's not very optimized, and that's not the way the companies would want their products to be used. Because 30 years ago, like Windows was made available in Urdu. 15 years ago, Android was made available in Urdu, and all the other Indic languages. I think a dozen and a half Indic languages, right? So, but people kind of reject even when the companies try to push users push back. They don't want the localized version, right? So this is what I experienced during my work at Meta.
I've experienced this too. I don't have the linguistic background that you do. You've been 18 years in the trenches advocating for language in emerging markets. But I do have a project manager background, and I've managed projects before for large clients that are listed in your article. I'm not going to name any names on this podcast. And we're doing 23 languages. Why are we doing these 23 languages? Because those are the languages that we were told to do. Right? Yeah. There's no thought into it.
Yeah.
And I would be managing a language like Malaysian. And part of my job was to get feedback from the local markets on how is the quality of the Malaysian language. And the local markets repeatedly told me, stop localizing into Malaysian. Like, we don't want it. We don't need it. Everybody that has this device uses it in English, and the Malaysian's not good. And I took that to the end client and said, look, we could save a lot of money by not localizing into Malaysian. The market doesn't want it. And they said, nope, too bad. We need to localize into Malaysian. It was just this oversight, this bureaucratic nightmare where no one was actually focused on the end user. They were focusing on their quarterly goals. And their quarterly goals told them they needed 23 languages by the end of the quarter.
This is a very wrong correlation, a classic example of a wrong correlation. So the localized, I tried to elaborate it in my article as well. The localized version is not very user-friendly, right? So the users reject it. Users are able to use the product in the international version to some extent, so they use it. So the wrong conclusion is people don't want the local version. It's not that. How can, if the people are talking in the language, if the people are writing in that language, if the people are reading in that language, how come they don't want to use that product in their language? The answer is the localized version is not user-friendly. So because the tech language has evolved in a certain kind of way, for example, lot of tech or gadgets or around the concepts around how to use them, how to interact with them, they have been adopted directly in whatever language they came, right? So trying to literally translate those is a nightmare for the user, right? For example, in Urdu, the National Institute of Pakistan, who worked with the Microsoft and laid the foundation, they even tried to translate computer. Can you imagine? The word computer was literally translated. So for example, they came up with the word. For example, they found an equivalent of compute, something that computes, right?
Yeah.
And they literally translated into as computer. And it's so ridiculous that any Urdu speaker would LOL just by hearing that word.
Right.
So this is the kind of foundations that was built.
Well, and these are the type of things, and it's hard for people like me. I am an American. I grew up speaking English, right?
Yeah.
And it is hard for people like me to understand that other languages are not like English. English is a highly codified language that has lots of resources and standards and widely accepted things. And those resources and standards largely reflect the actual language used, as opposed to this puritanical language. You talk about language puritanism in here. What is that? What is language puritanism?
So the second part, I'm doing a whole series. So the article you showed is this first part where I laid the whole argument. And the second part, which is already published, is about the linguistic puritanism. So linguistic puritanism is simply, I call it the reverse Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. So Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, a very famous linguistic theory, says that the language shapes the way we think, right? In simple words, language defines our worldview. Linguistic puritanism is the worldview defines the language too. The conservatives see the language differently. Globalists see it very differently. Nationalists see it very differently. Medieval peasants saw it very differently. Right. So our larger worldview defines the language. So in this case, for example, Hindi and Urdu, these both languages birthed out of one single language and they have a name for it. Linguistics call it the Hindustani language, the common lingua franca of the South Asia. So the Hindus and Muslim nationalist movement diverged, and so the language diverged. So it is the same language, but Muslims prioritized the lexical arsenal from the Muslim history and the Muslim resources, and the Hindus prioritized the from mostly words came from Sanskrit, right? In Urdu, most words come from Arabic and Persian, right? So the same sentence in Hindi, you just switch the word, for example, the prime minister word, you take it from the Persian, it becomes Urdu, you remove that and take it from the Sanskrit, it becomes Hindi. So syntax is same, right? And in the West, the nationalist movement were very different, but the rest of the world very different. So my larger argument is that each society has its own evolutionary path, right? And most of the emerging markets are on a very different trajectory, and the languages developed very differently, especially the relationship with technology. And the technologies came from the outside. Cars came from, and televisions, radios came from outside. And especially around the technology, language developed as people adopted the words as such, with their own accent, right? So when the Puritans tried to prescribe a language, and they tried to came up with bizarre words, that was never going to work. And by the way, it's not just technology. This phenomenon is worked on a larger scale. The institute that I described in my article as well, it's a premium linguistic institute, and it is for it has published like dozens, even hundreds of specific glossaries for specific purposes, but nobody uses those words in everyday language. They have a specific glossary for the office terms. Nobody uses those terms. They have specific glossary for liars. Nobody uses those terms. They have specific glossary for journalists. Nobody uses those words. So it is a larger phenomenon. But in the case of tech, it became more because, for example, the the local apps or the local ecosystem just follows the big tech.
Yeah.
Right? Because if the if my Windows interface is in English, so and most of the users are used to that, so local apps, although they could come up with very good localized versions, local apps, local websites, but they don't do that because the foundation, that's why I use the word landlord and tenant, right?
Mm.
So being a tenant, you can't do much. You can probably paint your walls, that's all. Even for that, you need a permission. So the big tech had the control from the start on the ecosystem, but unfortunately that went wrong and the entire ecosystem then developed around that mistake.
Well, and it sounds like a lot of good intentions here. So
of course,
I'm a Microsoft. I want to make sure people have access to Windows in their native language. Like, however, I'm doing my research before entering this market, and I realize this language doesn't have the glossaries and the terminology in the style guide. Hey, I'm going to do them a favor by putting together glossaries and defining the language. The problem is that's not how language works. Language isn't top down. Language evolves over time, but it evolves from the bottom up, not from the top down. You can tell people this is the language you're going to use, and they're not going to use it. They're not going to care.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And I see this a lot too, is with American companies taking it one step further and wanting to push out all of these new ideas. You know, we're talking about who controls language controls the ideas, right? And I'm not going to get into the whole debate about it, but it is a fact that there's a lot of U.S. companies right now are pushing, you know, gendered language, right?
Yes.
And, English doesn't have genders as far as our day-to-day nouns, right?
So
how do we take these weird changes to the rules and apply them to Spanish? And the Spanish market doesn't want it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of this well-intentioned, yet very big ego kind of hubris of we're going to give these guys what they want. And it's I hate it.
So I say that language might be the most democratizing thing in the world, right? No dictator, no totalitarian, no powerful government, nobody can dictate language. And history is full of history, the whole human history is a testament to that.
Yeah. I mean, they can try. They're not going to be in power very long. Once you start trying to control the words you use.
No, I don't want
to take it into that ominous place with this podcast. But it does show a unique challenge that these companies have when it comes to these emerging markets and, I mean, underdeveloped linguistic languages. I hate to say that, but it's... that would be the term to use for it, right? It's just languages that don't work the same way English works.
No. I think the right way to look at the problem is instead of dictating the user, just follow the user.
Well, and this brings us to our next point here, right? Because it's like I'm putting my project manager hat on. I'm like, all right, well, the users aren't using our product. Here's the analytics. I have this nice spreadsheet to show that. Why?
Yeah.
Figure out why. I need to go ask my users. I need to set up a feedback loop with my users so that I can improve based upon their preferences. I mean, it sounds to me like a simple solution. Gather more feedback from your markets. Implement that feedback, right? Why have companies not implemented a feedback loop, or have they tried and has it failed?
Okay, so I'm kind of an anomaly. I'm, as an Urdu linguist, is an anomaly, right? So if they, if you go to the most of the Urdu linguists, they will say that the pure Urdu language, they will try to advocate. Because I described my fight to fix the problem, right? So my fight started with my own community, my colleagues, right?
Mm.
And then it went on to project managers and then the vendors and then the on and on. Trying to convince and trying to make my case, trying to make them understand, because I thought it is obvious, but it's not obvious. So it's from an outsider point of view, it's a lot more complicated. So I kind of stumbled upon, because the way you look at language, I had this kind of, I was kind of a very abnormal kid among my school, college fellows, the way I looked at language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was, my friend would make fun of me because the way I looked at language, and
heretic.
Burned the witch.
Yeah. So when I applied that, I call myself a Darwinist, right? So
love it.
I saw language as an evolving living organism. So that is very unusual way of looking at the language, especially in this part of the world, because what the nationalist movement came up with, the Muslim and Hindu identity and the linguistic identity, that is stuck there. The whole literary and linguistic communities follow that. So when they say Urdu, they are actually referring to a certain version of the lingua franca of the South Asia in the 19th century that the Muslim leaders prescribed, right? So I was against that, and that's how I stumbled upon the solution. Okay, I thought, okay, what we are trying to say, language, that is not the language. That is the dead language nobody uses. And interestingly, even the person, even the linguist or the literary expert, the poet or the great writer, when they use language in their everyday, for example, they are referring to some gadget, they would use the language that they are saying is not pure language. Because for the practicality reason,
because that's how people talk.
That's how people talk. So they can't use the language they are prescribing in the book, that remains within the book. But when they are using in the real life, they are using the language that the masses use.
Right.
So I thought, okay, the solution is very simple. It's not very complicated. Just observe people. Just let's see how people are using. And then the things became very simple. Okay, I had the... But like trying to bring this conversation into the work was a nightmare. Like my first attempt, I kind of burned my feet in the very first attempt. I mentioned in the article, tried to introduce some very simple changes and immediately marked errors. So I secured that project. I became the lead after like 3 years of hard work. It was a dream project. I was the lead linguist at the whole Google localization for Urdu, right? And I lost the half of the project. They just took away. So this is why it's so complicated.
Because you weren't following the rules.
I wasn't following the rules.
Exactly.
That's why.
The rules that nobody likes. And nobody wants.
No,
nobody asked.
No, the rules that the industry thought is the standard, I was trying to deviate those rules. So,
well, and also, I feel like, I mean, there's a lot of blame. I hate placing blame, but let's do it just because it's fun. It's cathartic. There's a lot of blame to go around. And once again, with good intentions. I don't want to say people are being malicious here. But we can say, well, these tech companies, Microsoft and Google, because come on, they're the biggest ones. They really screwed up. They dropped the ball. They messed this up. But there's a lot of blame in the linguistic community. As you point out in your article, the buyers, they hire these big MLVs who then hire smaller regional language providers. And then those guys hire translators. So there's this whole supply chain that has kind of failed, because nowhere in that supply chain has anyone raised their hand. Or maybe they did. Maybe like on the project example that I gave with Malaysian, you know, someone did raise their hand and was told, quiet down. You're making too much noise.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it goes all the way down to the linguists. And one thing I've found, I love the linguists, backbone of our industry, all of that stuff. But linguists can be very particular about doing things right. And sometimes I feel it's a gatekeeping method to, well, because I'm a translator, because I'm certified in all of these things and I follow X, Y, and Z rules, and you're not a translator because you don't have all of this training, right? So it's kind of this way, all these different certifications and stuff like that are kind of a way to not naturally, but inorganically keep new ideas away.
Yeah. So I think I would like to put some blame somewhere.
Yeah, right.
I have already taken so much
anywhere but me.
It doesn't matter because I'm gonna talk bluntly anyway. I think the because these localization efforts doesn't bring the money immediately. Right. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you want to develop a localized ecosystem in Pakistan, it would take like a decade, right? Mm-hmm. And a joint effort of the big tech, not just one company. One company can't do anything. Maybe like companies like Google, they can do alone a lot because they have so much influence. Like Apple is a very minor player, so Google has like the whole monopoly on the mobile phone market. Mm-hmm. And if they want to go, they can make a huge impact. For example, if the users see their phones in the local language, it will have effect on the whole ecosystem. Anyway.
But it's a big project. Like I actually in a past life worked on a project like this for Microsoft. Or Microsoft decided the language that they were using was too archaic and they wanted to change their brand voice, and it's modern voice was the terminology. And it wasn't just for other languages, it was for English too. They wanted to be friendlier. And that kind of set the trend for a lot of other companies. Most tech companies that were founded in the last 10 years have this very friendly, to me, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't want my computer talking to me like it's my friend, but whatever. it is the way that it is. But that was a big project at Microsoft because you got to go back and update everything. All of your glossaries, your translation memories are worthless now. Right.
Yeah.
And now we're getting into the age of AI, and companies like this are asking themselves the question, rightfully so, how can I use AI to solve these problems? Well, the AI has been trained on all of the puritanical language.
Yeah. Yeah. I gave the example, ChatGPT, Urdu version picked the same glossary that 30 years ago Microsoft came up with.
Yeah,
I shared the screenshot. So I was going back to the vendor manager problem. So the topic you raised earlier, I think because there is little money involved or the return is late, so it's kind of a little careless attitude, and random people are assigned. People with no knowledge of the South Asia or its culture or its language, random people are okay. You are free. Can you take six of these more languages and can you take care of this? I think this has been a big factor because I heard from the people. I was not around. I started in 2007-8. I became a serious translator in 2012, working on big projects. Before that, I was a small player, and before that, I wasn't even there. So I've heard from the seniors, some people try to raise voice because this glossary is ridiculous. And then they called on a meeting, and the lead terminologist, he was a big name in Pakistan. He passed away, I think, recently. He got a huge medal, civilian honorary award for his work. I say for wrecking the whole industry, but whatever. So, and he was in the meeting, and the linguists were there, and the project manager there from Microsoft, and said, "Oh, I made this. We have came up with this language. Now this is going to be used. So shut up and use it."
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, what do you say to that, right? It's like,
no, okay. But okay, so Windows XP was translated. Okay. No adoption. Somebody should have raised the question why people are not using the local language. Maybe something is wrong. And that Windows 8 was, I was working on the Windows 8. Windows 8 was extensively translated, like even the entire Microsoft Office suite was translated in Urdu, even local other local languages. My mother tongue Punjabi was also included, like five languages from Pakistan alone, right? Again, no adoption.
No adoption. People just don't want it. Is it? So the, do people know about it?
People don't know. People like, don't know.
Honest question. So they're just using it in English?
No, majority of people don't know that it is available in local language. It is a surprise for people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Vast majority of people don't know.
Well, one of the things to me, because when we're talking about tech companies, we're talking a lot about, I mean, yes, B2C, but a lot of B2B companies too. So, but companies that are largely targeting adults. Right, adults are the ones that are buying Windows PCs, not children. But where I've seen some more acceptance of new ideas, using new language and kind of changing the way people do things, is when they're targeting children. Because, first of all, children don't speak English all the time at home, right? It's pretty common in emerging markets. As people grow, they learn English in school just so that they can be competitive on the global market space.
Yeah.
But 8-year-olds have not yet learned English. So that if you want to reach that audience, then you have to go in their local language.
No. It's a bit more complicated than that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, so there is a small... education system is very it's divided in classes. So, for example, if I give the example of Pakistan, there are English medium schools, where elite schools, expensive schools, right? Private schools where children learn English from the very start. And that is like 5% of the population. No, maybe less than that. Maybe 2-3% of the population, right? And then public schools, they are Urdu medium. They teach Urdu and their whole syllabus is in Urdu. They have one subject. They do teach English. So that they learn English to some extent as well.
Yeah.
Because they are a compulsory subject is English, one of their. But it is very surface level linguistic knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So their real life experiences are still happening there in their own languages, whatever that is. Right. So that is why I use word optimized. You can go on the same way. Maybe a next generation of computers, the smart glasses or whatever, they can be in English as well. But people. It is going to multifold. The problem is going to the more advanced computer is getting, the more intimate it is becoming, right? Desktop PC was just a big box on the but mobile became a lot more closer to people's heart, right?
And this goes back to something my business partner has been talking about this for decades. He calls it the underwear effect, right? It's a catchy name, but essentially it is it's like the closer something is to being next to you, like while you're naked, I don't know.
I'm just paraphrasing
here. The more important localization becomes, right?
It is true. That is my point. So the next generation of computers, if it's smart glasses or headset or whatever, it's going to be even more important that we get the localization right, because it will have even more intimate connection with the user, right? And the their mother tongue, even their mother tongue, not just the like okay, in India it's the Hindi lingua franca, tech focuses on Hindi. In Pakistan it is Urdu, but like there are 8 or 10 languages that has like millions of speakers. In India it is like 30-40 languages, right? So even among those, if you narrow down to 16 languages in South Asia, right, and that the big tech focuses on, and those are the language that people are crying in, people are laughing in, people are loving in, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Loving. They make love in those languages, right? They might use English very efficiently in the office. But if, like, there is a very famous joke that goes around. So, majority of people in Pakistan, the majority ethnic group is Punjabi, is my mother tongue, right? But under the influence of partition, Muslim-Hindu divide, people adopted Urdu, and it became the language. But people are very fluent in Urdu. It is like native. It is like the mother tongue. But whenever people fight, they fight in Punjabi. The real emotions come in the mother language, right? So the next generation of computer, it is way more important to get the localization right for the next generation of computer.
Well, because it's coming more less of a tool that you occasionally log into. I mean, just thinking, when I was a teenager, the computer sat in the corner of the house at a desk, and when you needed to log on, you'd go, you turn it on, and you'd have your session, and then you'd go away and do something else. And now, it's all, I'm pulling everything, it's always here in my pocket. So it's less a tool that I occasionally log into, and more an extension of myself.
So, and the next, and even the next one is going to be like an organ of our body.
It's going to be a what?
An organ of our body.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're already talking about that, like with implants and stuff. It's like, my gosh, I don't want to know what my kids are going to be.
But I think the things are going in that direction.
Yeah, yeah, they are. And, and language needs to reflect that, I would say.
Of course.
I had a professor in college. This was before I was ever even knew what the localization industry was. But this professor in college, we were talking about linguistics around the world. And we were talking about this idea that people's languages are going extinct, which is true. It happens. It's very sad. Languages go extinct. Alphabets go extinct. But we're talking about kind of like this bastardization of languages. How some languages are being corrupted over time. Particularly because like English moves in, or Spanish moves in, or French moves in, and they start using these new words like computer, for example, right? And I always remember what this professor said, because he says, actually, the language that needs to worry the most about becoming bastardized is English. Because at the end of the day, people go home from work and they speak Punjabi to their wives, their kids. It's a thriving language. English is being watered down because it's being spoken by so many. It's probably, I don't know, have the statistics on this, but I would guess that there's more non-native speakers of English than native speakers of English.
That's true. That's true. That's true. I think with the advance of AI, local languages and all indigenous cultures, it's kind of deglobalization, globalization, right? If there is a term for that, the world is going to be extremely connected, extremely singular, but localized cultures and languages will be strengthened because of the AI and the all the tech developments. So localization will be even more important in the coming decades.
Oh, I agree. I agree. We're here to stay. The need for localization, but it doesn't mean we can't take a look. Time is coming. There are a lot of practices in this industry that people say, well, do you think the industry needs to move away from this practice? You know, the one.
Okay. So sorry to cut you, but I wanted to make a point that I missed earlier. The companies will eventually learn this. This effort, because they call it the tail end languages, right? Tail end markets. But I always quote the example of TikTok. TikTok although they couldn't get the localization right, but they got one aspect very right. For example, TikTok. TikTok is the only big tech company that popularized in emerging markets first and went to the developed world.
I've never thought about that.
No. This is how it happened. Yeah. So they perfected their formula in China, and then they came to India and Pakistan and Bangladesh and all these countries, and it became instantly very well. You know why?
Why?
Because it was a visual. It was mostly visual.
Yeah.
It was mostly visual app. You don't need to. It was developed for those people who are who were completely, totally uneducated, who couldn't read or write, and it was so easy to use. It was not very complicated, and because, for example, there is kind of a like TikTok cringe in the South Asian educated people, because mostly like working class and uneducated people are on TikTok, and they are the creators and they are making more money than the educated YouTubers. So there's kind of jealousy, and they call it the cringe content. But I think they couldn't get the language right. They followed the same, they have the same problems in the localization, but they got the cultural aspect right. They understood what the users want and how the users think and how the users interact with. They got that aspect because they have that kind of user base within China. So I think they perfected their art there. But if you develop a product in North America, that is very educator oriented, very education college people oriented, right? Facebook was popularized by college kids. So like the culture and the language, there are two aspects that a product has to get right to really penetrate deep into the emerging markets.
And you have to have both. And I think this is a great metaphor, case study, whatever you want to call it, for the shift that we are faced with as a localization industry right now, which is... The meal ticket is over for those of us that have spent decades in this industry translating words, because we know how to translate words good. We do it good. You know, we do our job. We hit our KPIs and check the box, right? Yeah. Here's your Malaysian translation. I did a good job, right? And gone are those days where we think that translating words is enough to add value to our organization. Mm. You mentioned culture, getting the culture right.
Yeah.
Whose job is that in an organization? At Microsoft, whose job is it to get the culture right? You mentioned in this thing, they actually, Facebook, I think, went on to hire a program manager responsible just for emerging markets, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So they have someone whose job it is to look after that, right? Maybe they'll make some changes. Maybe there'll just be a continuation of the same old stuff that we've seen over and over again. The big argument that you make is this needs to be a top-down decision. Someone at the leadership level needs to step up. And you even tag a bunch of CEOs. Bill Gates, Satya Nadella, Sundar Pichai, Mark Zuckerberg.
Whoever I thought.
Good luck with that. I'm sure they're going to get back to you. Your inbox must be exploding right now. But it's a good point that this is a conversation that needs to be driven by the top level, because at the mid level, we've got our KPIs, we've got our quality scores, we've got our quarterly goals met.
Yeah.
Why would we change this? Because what happens, and you can speak to this.
Yeah.
If you raise your hand and stick your head up above the trenches and say, I've got a better way to do this, we need to do X, Y, and Z, your hand might get cut off.
Yeah. I understand. My hand are already very injured.
your hands have gunshot wounds in them.
So I think getting the so we know that in the process, in the localization process, we have the owners, right? Ultimately, it is the person who is making the decision. For example, somebody in Microsoft or Google, that person has to be extra vigilant. And the other point that I talked in detail, the middleman needs to be cut short. The people working and the quality owners, they should have a direct communication. So the there are lots and lots of middlemen, and they contribute nothing. It's like receiving email and they're forwarding, and then again receiving from the linguist and then forwarding back to the client. That's all they do.
And there needs to be a way to get that communication moving up through the supply chain from the end user or the linguist, whoever it is, up to the people that are actually able to make these decisions. Yeah. Now, I would argue that
I gave an example when I tried to bring this conversation as a lead linguist while I was working on the Google localization products. So after a lot of trouble and pain, I eventually got into a meeting where I was supposed to present my case, but the real quality owner was not there. So it was like the reviewer, a manager from the reviewing vendor, from the translation vendor, the translator, the reviewer, that's it. So the real quality owner was not in that meeting. And so it was useless, that meeting. Although it cost me, it wasn't useless, it cost me big time. They just took half of the project from me. So instead of like, I tried to talk to my managers that what I'm making the case. But the problem is, so like you read my article, right? And I kind of, after these failed attempts, I learned how to communicate with the with the people who are outsiders to the market, how to convey, right? So that's how I came up with the example of like, just imagine, okay, it's hard to imagine, but just imagine if you are a native speaker of English, just imagine the whole of your phone's interface is in biblical English.
Right.
It's very easy to imagine, and how horrifying that would be from a user's point of view, right?
Yeah. Thou shalt swipe up.
So I think it's not although I know it's a huge machine and it needs to be like, look, we are talking, okay, we are talking now. I think your organization is one of the like big players in who can drive the conversation, and you invited me, and we have been like going in details, and many people who are at key positions in the industry, like they read my article, they shared my article, they commented, and they gave very encouraging comments. Like probably most of the localization think tanks, they have read my article, and they are already bringing this conversation up. So one big platform, I won't name them until it is confirmed, but another big platform in the localization industry, they have invited me to present this case in person next year. So nice. Yeah, so the conversation has started. Actually, that's why I decided. They go, okay, so like talking to managers within the organization, it doesn't work. So I decided to speak openly, right? I think eventually, I don't know if you have read the president of the Women in Localization organization. She shared my article, and like she showered praise on me. I'm really happy for that. So conversation has started. Don't think it's impossible. Yeah, so the big people who will make the decision, How long will it take to? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But when the industry will start talking, then the people will listen. And you know the conversation around my article was shared in the context that they had. I think Lokworld, the recent Lokworld event, they had the conversation around that the localization is a boardroom discussion. Mm-hmm. It needs to be boardroom discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And that conversation happened. And then the president of the Women in Localization came to LinkedIn and saw my article. And she shared in that context why it needs to happen, because when it doesn't, it misses like half the world population.
True. And I think awareness is sometimes it sounds kind of like a cop out to say this, but it's like, I think awareness is the first thing that we need to go for here, yeah. Right? Rather yeah. than, yeah. all right, we need to change the world. Here's my manifesto. You need to start doing X, Y, and Z immediately. First, people yeah. need to become aware of the problem, and then they need to yeah. Talk through it. Because like I said, trying to wrap my English-speaking American brain around this, if I wasn't involved in the localization industry, I wouldn't know what we're talking about here. And so what's the big deal? You want Urdu? Yeah. Here's Urdu. There's all of these PhD translators tell me it's good, so yeah. eat it.
Right? Yeah, 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 yeah. It's very complicated. Usually the simplest things are the most difficult to grasp, because these kind of things go against common sense.
Yeah.
So that's why I love the. Darwin's idea was very simple, but it took like after 2,400 years after Socrates, somebody came with this simple idea. Okay, things cannot just come out of nowhere. There must be a starting point. For example, if you want to explain it today, it's very simple. You can explain it to two sentences, right? You don't need like a three-page equation or something and a super genius mathematician. But it was the most difficult, because it was the most against your common sense. Mm. And same is the case with this localization problem. It is very against the common sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hear that. That's why it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
It's, but yeah. Thank you so much today for coming on and starting the conversation. You already published part two. When do we get a part three? Is this going to be an ongoing soapbox?
Yeah. Soon. Within November. And the third part will talk about the vendor problem.
The third part we'll talk about the vendor. Ooh, okay. I look forward to that one.
Yeah. How to address the vendor problem.
All right. Well,
in one word, in just one sentence, just cut short the middleman.
Cut short the middleman. Oh, gosh. All right. We're going to have a debate about that. Because I don't know. Like, my whole thing is there's a whole framework for our industry around the middleman, as you call it.
Yeah.
Are times changing enough where companies can actually start cutting out the middleman? Perhaps not yet, is my opinion. But we can debate. We can debate that another time for sure.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the clock here. I want to start wrapping this up. Any closing thoughts for people? Thoughts, action items, calls to action?
Yeah. So I think localization is not just translation. And translation is not easy. Stop saying that translation is easy. It's the most complicated thing. Human language is the most complicated thing that this universe has come up with, right? So, and that work is very complicated. And taking it easy and thinking that, okay, somebody random can handle like 16 Indic languages, please stop doing that. If you want to put somebody in charge of the Indic languages, make sure they have read the 5,000 years history of the South Asia. They are aware of the every cultural nuance. That is my advice to the industry. Please don't think culture is the most complicated. Look at how terrible AI is at understanding culture. Culture is very difficult to understand. Cultural nuances are the most complicated thing, and take it serious. It's not just simple. It's very complicated work.
So don't hire an English-speaking American like me to manage your Indic languages.
No. Somebody who is
to manage your Indic languages is what I said.
Yeah.
Hire someone who knows what they're talking about. Maha. Ikram, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to wrap us up. I think that was a great place to close it off on. Ladies, gentlemen, chat. We are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this NIMSY Live experience, join us next time by going to our LinkedIn page, clicking on the events tab, and seeing what live streamed events are coming up in the future. I appreciate our guest today, Ikram. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us live today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers. Thanks.